The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Another day, it's Wednesday, and we're going to talk to David Duke this first hour about many things, but among them we must address the overt, blatant, treasonous, treacherous, traitorous, hideous attack on the American Constitution by people that you could all pretty well identify without me even giving you any more hints. You know who they are, you know what they are, they're not Americans, and our First Amendment is their biggest enemy. There are any number of different tentacles of the beast now reaching out to attempt to strangle and otherwise short-circuit and finish off anyone attempting to present what he or she or they believe to be the truth about our lives and what's being done to them. The idea of overthrowing our culture, our society, our way of life is quite clearly their prime directive. This is not a joke. It is being led, of course, primarily by the mainstream media, 95% of which is controlled by about six corporations, all owned by representatives of this particular mental and emotional persuasion. The other aspect of it is just as bad, and that has to do with lawyers. Lawyers, because these companies, especially the entertainment companies and the media companies and the industrial companies, use their lawyers as if they were pit bulls. They sick them on people who have no ability to attempt to meet them in court on even remotely even terms because they don't have the money. Money is justice in this country, in most cases. So we're up against an enormous obstacle, tremendously diverse and evil creature. And David Duke is certainly feeling a lot of the pain. He is continually doing what he does so well, and that is writing about and making videos about, and if you can still see his videos, I urge you to watch them, about these people, who they are, and how they think. And he doesn't pontificate, he simply quotes them verbatim. He lets their words do the talking. They don't like that, because it's their truth. And their truth is about as un-American as it gets. David, welcome back. How are you?
Okay, I think we're okay now, right?
Yeah, we are.
I'm speaking, I guess, from the Zionist-occupied government dungeons for free speech.
Did you hear what I said?
Yes, I did.
Okay, good.
The biggest pain and the biggest struggle we have, and the one thing that they cannot stand, is when you identify the basis of this mindset that you're speaking of, the powerful mindset you're speaking of, because it's not just a mindset. It is essentially a tribal takeover. We have a big brother, as outlined by George Orwell in his brilliant novel, 1984. But Big Brother has a very distinct tribal nature to him in the society. It's the Zionist we talk about all the time. And it's the one thing you're not allowed to talk about in the media. You might have some discussion about even sometimes about immigration. However, even the controlled news networks, which Orwell talked about a lot. Remember, 1984, I think, is one of the most brilliant novels. And I hope that every patriot, every true American, every true defender of Western Christian civilization understands that there is a war against not only the values of Western Christian civilization and culture, but also against the very people who created it. And the nature of this suppression of freedom of speech and the nature of this insanity, these endless wars we've had, we've suffered over 100 years since the First World War, really, on behalf of Zionist causes that have caused the death of 100 million Europeans, First and Second World War, the incredible wars we've had in the Middle East, these wars for Israel and Iraq and in Afghanistan, actually, and the fact that we've had the rise of ISIS from these things. If you remember, and you know, you've known me for a long time, and you know, and it's very clear, my record is very clear. In 2003, before the Iraq war, I went all over the world and I said there were no weapons of mass destruction. It was a lie. This is a war for Israel, and it's a war that's going to hurt America, not help America. Not only is it going to not be a cakewalk, as told to us Paul Wolfowitz and Richard Pearl and the Zionist neocons. They're really neo-commies, actually. They were all originally worshippers of Leon Trotsky, first head of the Red Army. Lev Bronstein, who killed between 7 and 11 million Christians in Russia and launched the communist regime in Russia that killed many more tens of millions of people and went through much of Europe and raped every woman, almost every little girl in those areas, and one of the greatest crimes in the history of the world. The other day, Hamburg had evacuated, I think it was Hamburg, one of the major cities in Germany. They had to evacuate 60,000 people because of a bomb from the Second World War, a huge bomb that had not exploded.
That was Frankfurt. And,
yeah, Frankfurt, excuse me. I'm glad you corrected that. But it's a huge bomb. And the interesting thing is, of course, our controlled media had no discussion about the fact that this bomb and the policy we had of bombing innocent civilians, men, women, and children. And let's make it clear. Those were the people bombed in the cities. Most of the young men were off fighting the war. And the people left in the beautiful cities of Germany and Europe in fact, beautiful cities with churches and great artwork. But the people left behind, the wives, the babies in the cradles who were burned alive by the hundreds of thousands. This was a great war crime, and this was a crime which historians and validate, and of course David Irving is one of those. This was a war crime that was began by the, quote, allies, unquote. In fact, Churchill in his own papers talks about the fact that he wanted to have massive murder, basically, mm-hmm. of German civilians, which was a war crime at the mm-hmm. time. It was a violation of the Geneva Convention, and when this was done, he wanted to get the Germans to respond to bomb London to get the heat off the oil fields because the German military was actually shooting down or blowing up the British Air Force on the ground because eventually those fighters and those bombers, they have to land. And he himself launched these massive raids in Germany that killed something like 30 or 40,000 people. And he bombed Germany for 7 days straight, the civilian populations, created firestorms, created incendiaries, which burned alive mothers, their children, and, of course, elderly, because those are the people who are not at the front. And this was one of the greatest crimes in all the history of warfare.
Right.
Certainly a great crime in terms of the modern values that we have about not attacking civilian populations. It was interesting to me that there was no discussion about this in our controlled media, about the nature of the fact that this bomb is sitting in the middle of a city, in the middle of places where people live, where children are sleeping in their beds. Imagine if your children were burned alive, or your grandparents, or your parents for that matter, or your loved one, your wife, Imagine if your little boy or girl suffered this. Imagine if you lost everything in these vicious attacks. This was a war crime. But we have a media that is controlled by a particular tribe that wanted this war, and that had their own reasons for the war. And ironically, this war was begun, by the way, in concert. We didn't declare war. The West, England and France, did not declare war on the Soviet Union, nor did the United States. The Soviets absolutely invaded Poland nearly the same time. And a lot of the Polish officers, in fact, escaped to the East. And they were captured ultimately when the communists came in. Now, right. The Germans, when they captured the Polish army officers, the ones they did capture, and the troops, the Germans treated them with decency. They didn't torture them. They didn't murder them. In fact, the Germans actually released the Polish army prisoners of war within a few months. The war was still going on with the pledge, of course, they wouldn't fight, let them go back to their homes and families and businesses and farms and all that they had in Poland.
That's right.
The Bolsheviks, on the other hand, they massacred the 15,000. It's actually, many people argue it's 22,000 of the elite, the aristocracy of Poland, the very best leadership of Poland. And they took them to the Katyn Forest and they put a bullet in the back of their head. They murdered them in cold blood. In fact,
one after another, after another, after another.
Yeah, exactly. But this is, you know, we've had a controlled media for many, many years, and we've had a media, even from the very beginning. The New York Times was the most influential newspaper in America. The New York Times has been run exclusively and only by members of this particular tribe, the most supremacist, the most racist, the most suppressive tribe in history, there's no people that fight harder for what they think to be their interest and their genealogy and so forth. I'll give you an example this way. Israel is a Jewish state, and it's a state based on genetics. It's a state based on blood. It's not important for a Jew to immigrate to Israel that he's religious. He can be anti-God. He can be an atheist. He can be a communist. He can be anything as long as of Jewish blood. It is a state based on Jewish blood. There is an organization called Birthright Israel, which is run by the Bronfman family. Now, this organization has been supported by hundreds of millions of dollars. I think it's the billions now. And what this organization is about is taking Jewish young kids and giving them a free trip to Israel. And the idea of it, and they're open about this, is that they meet other Jewish girls and boys, and they develop relationships, and they get married, and they have children, and they continue, you know, the Jewish people. Now, interestingly enough, just the other day there was a big headline that there's been a little controversy because this Birthright Israel organization is now demanding genetic tests.
Tests, yeah,
for
yeah.
The Jews that go to Israel.
DNA tests.
Genetic tests, yeah. Right? Now, this is the same media, right, that says race isn't important, that, you know, your heritage is not important, that says, to Europeans anyway, that you need to have massive immigration to where you become a minority. They've orchestrated every major Jewish organization. And we're not talking about just a few Jewish organizations or a few Jewish people. And again, it's not every Jew, and we're not criticizing and condemning every individual Jew. But there is a Jewish establishment, just like we're in a war with a country, there is an establishment of that country. And every major powerful Jewish organization in the United States of America is for open borders, they support Israel, that build giant walls, while they're against any walls in America to protect from Mexican immigration. We have a Jewish state that doesn't even allow the marriage between a Jew and a non-Jew. We have a Jewish state that has the strictest immigration laws in the world, again, based on genetics, based on heritage in that country. We have a state that was created by absolute naked terrorism against the Palestinian people and others. And in wars, they've killed tens of thousands of Christian Palestinians and tens of thousands of Lebanese Christians.
Never stopped either.
They were the ones who created ISIS. I mean, this is what's so great about your program, Jeff, is what you've done over the years is you've delved into the issues that nobody in the mainstream media can talk about, but is so easily provable. And I give an example this way. You've talked about the fact that, and we've all talked about the fact that the Israeli state has committed terrorism against the United States of America in the Levant affair, where they blew up American installations trying to blame it on Israel and get us a false flag operation. You've talked about the attack on the Liberty many, many times on your program, and of course I've talked about it over the years, which was a vicious, surprise, brutal attack upon an American ship, military ship in international waters. And we just have recent stories, in fact, in the major Jewish press in Israel, which is not in the New York Times and it's not in the major press in America, where they admit that there are recordings of Jewish pilots radioing back to the command in Israel, saying this is obviously an American ship, right?
Right. Yep.
And then they say that don't worry about that. You just go ahead and attack it, right?
That's right.
So we have an enormous evil that's going on in this country, an evil that is beyond any other evil. It's the same evil that created international communism, which killed more people on the planet than any other doctrine in the history of the world. The Marxist communist doctrine. And Marxism, of course, was started by Karl Marx, long line of rabbis. And he was also guided in his communist development by a Jewish individual by the name of Moses Hess. In fact, Marx says he learned his communism from Moses Hess. And interestingly enough, Moses Hess is considered the true founder of the Zionist state and Zionism. In fact, after the state of Israel was established, they took Moses Hess's body. They took his grave, took his body.
Yeah.
And they buried him in Israel.
Yeah.
And they have big conferences, communist and Zionist, you see. And this is the kind of Zionist that by the way, that Bernie Sanders is. He went to a communist kibbutz in Israel. He was an official.
The most hardcore, intense communist kibbutz in Israel. That's what everyone
says.
Exactly.
It was a Stalinist kibbutz. They honored Stalin. On his death, they had huge ceremonies for him.
Yeah.
And this guy took back the red flag from the kibbutz. And he was also, as I said, and I've talked about this many times, you've talked about it. You don't even hear about this on the media. Of course, David Duke is always called ex-KKK leader David Duke because I was in a Klan organization for 4 years in a position. Always nonviolent, always condemning violence. And I left that and moved on in my life. But Bernie Sanders, at an older age than I was in the Klan, was an elector for the Socialist Workers Party. And the Socialist Workers Party, you can look up on Wikipedia, folks, if you doubt me here.
It's all there.
And by the way, the source for Bernie Sanders being an elector, being an official of this Communist Party, was printed in the Washington Post. It's just not headlines, you see, people don't even understand this. They think Bernie Sanders was just, quote, a socialist. Well, he was an elector for the Socialist Workers Party, which is a party that calls itself, identifies itself as the true heir of the Bolshevik Party of Russia, and their patron saint, the man that they honor more than any other man in the world, is Leon Trotsky, real name Lev Bronstein,
yeah,
who killed between 7 and 11 million Christians in Russia. And going back to the war, remember. The Bolsheviks under Lenin and Trotsky and the early Bolsheviks and through Stalin had killed tens of millions of Christians, and we were on their side. We didn't declare war on them. We didn't have the media saying we have to end this horrific cause of communism. And now, folks, we have what I'm saying, and this is the most important thing I can get over hopefully in this broadcast today, is that in going into the archives of the Soviet Union, and I was in Moscow 5 years, and I've spent many, many, many days in the archives of the Russian government and the communist archives. And if you look into the archives and you study this, and I worked, in fact, I got to know Alexander Solzhenitsyn quite well, who was the great Nobel Prize winner.
A remarkable man. Yep.
Fantastic man. It was one of the greatest honors of my life to know him and discuss things with him and actually compare notes on a lot of issues. And so you look into the archives, and what's going on now in America, the suppression of freedom of speech, the intimidation of people who dare to have a dissident point of view, and the economic disaster that people might face. I mean, if they have a big business and they try to defend American principles, this is what's going on right now. And also what's going on with the violent Antifa. There's a big article in Forward Magazine, which is one of the leading intellectual Jewish magazines in America. And they have a big article about how the Antifa was actually founded by a bunch of Jews. In New York, and their whole duty was to attack any patriots who didn't want to see us in that European war and who were believers in the values of American people. And they literally, in this article, they point out in this piece in a Jewish publication that not only were they, you know, basically Marxists, but they were also, this is amazing, but they were also organized criminals. In fact, the guy that writes it brags about his uncle, you know, Shady or Sandy, whatever his name is, who is a member of these Jewish organized crime groups, like Murder Incorporated, which is led by Lance.
A mob, exactly.
Yeah, mob. And by the way, the ADL, which is always attacking you and always attacking me and always standing up against every principle of our founding fathers in this nation, the ADL was financed in great part by Moshe Dalitz, who was a big organized crime boss in Las Vegas. But there's never been any scandal about organized criminals. Meyer Lansky was a big supporter of Israel and the Zionist causes and the ADL. Meyer Lansky, he was the biggest organized criminal of the country.
Right.
But because of the control of Hollywood, all you see basically is movies. Sometimes they actually kind of celebrate certain Jewish gangsters, but they romanticize them, like the Bugsy Siegel movie, right? Who was just a murderous.
Exactly. Creep. That's a very good point. Perfect point.
If you compare the Jewish syndicate and Jewish organized crime to, for instance, the mafia is like small change. The mafia existed in Italy. And some of the Italian immigrants in America got involved in the mafia. But the truth is that Jewish syndicate and Jewish organized crime, including what's called the Russian mafia today, which is a double lie. It's not Russian. It's not Christian. You know, and it is, in fact, Jewish, completely Jewish controlled and dominated. And that's talked about. This is one of the most dangerous and the most powerful organized criminal base organization in the world. They have human trafficked hundreds of millions, and that's not an exaggeration. That's according to the UN. They've trafficked hundreds of millions of innocent European Christian girls, luring them out, saying a better life in another country, and they can get jobs and so forth. And then they end up in Israel with their passports burned. And again, you can read Jewish publications like Moment and many other publications like Spector's article, which was a New York Times syndicated piece, where they talk about organized crime figures luring Slavic women. They just don't identify these people as Jews, mm-hmm. but they were in fact Jewish. Now, again, that's not every Jew, but it just shows you who really controls things. So we do have a big brother, every day that goes by, I understand more the genius of Orwell. Did you read 1984 when you were younger?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yep.
What kind of impression did that book make on you?
Logical, pragmatic. I said, this is probably what's going to... I talked to my father, and he said, yes, that's where it's going. He knew.
Well, I love to study history, and I I've studied the history. I think I might write a small article, a biography on this great man, George Orwell. But Orwell was one of the individual Gentiles who was taken in by the lie of Bolshevism. The lie of Bolshevism is that it's a human rights organization. All you have to do, workers, is lose your chains and you're going to have freedom and love and brotherhood. And of course, what happened in Russia was the furthest thing from freedom, love, and brotherhood. Imagine, they tortured.
Bolshevism, millions. People need to keep in mind that Bolshevism was not an accident. It was a creation. Yeah. It was injected into the heart and soul of Russia. And it overthrew the Tsar, it took over the country, and it slaughtered, ultimately, tens of millions, I don't know, we don't even know how many people. Bolshevism, okay? Almost every major ism of the last century and before, socialism, communism, Marxism, all the isms, came from the Zionist Jewish community.
The pornographic movement, which has done more to destroy families. We could just go on.
Well, they went on. The first goal was to take down the morality of the Christian Western world. They knew once they did that, that it would be a piece of cake. And they were right.
But what people don't really understand, and they don't understand this a lot because of the control media, is that Bolshevism was really a ethnic process. It was like an organized crime family, just like they talk about the mafia being Italians and so forth. This was Bolshevism was run by, you know, by an ethnic group. They had some Gentile collaborators. But I'll give you an example. You're very familiar, I know, with the Frankfurter School or the Frankfurt School.
Sure.
And
speaking of Frankfurt, by the way, that bomb was one of Churchill's bombs, a 4,000-pound bomb that was successfully defused in the middle of Frankfurt. So that was another gift from Winston Churchill, the drunk, one quart of whiskey a day minimum, who used to take his clothes off and run around naked outside when he got excited about something. This is all true.
Churchill was a mess, and he was such a big liar. And, but again, we have a media that takes people who led us to war.
Took total care of him, of course.
And who did some of the greatest war crimes in the history of the world, like the bombing and so forth, which he orchestrated. And they make him into heroes, yet we know that he was actually under the employ of a lot of Hungarians, and he was actually a Rothschild agent.
He was owned, David, as you know, by Bernard Baruch, one of the wealthiest men of the last century, who twice bailed Churchill out of complete bankruptcy. He owned Churchill.
Oh yeah, not only that, but he also received hundreds of thousands of pounds from the Hungarian Jews during the war.
It's all documented. None of this is hearsay, okay?
None of this is hearsay. In fact, this is it. This is why I get in so much trouble, because I quote major Jewish writers. Now, the major biographer of Churchill, and I hope people are finding this show today very interesting. It's very historical, but I hope you find it fascinating to learn the truth about history. Truth has been kept from us. But the chief biographer of Churchill was a guy named Martin Gilbert. Now, he became the British official biographer by the government of Churchill. In fact, he was knighted for his work by giving Churchill this great biography. His name is Martin Gilbert. But Martin Gilbert, that was a British or anglicized name. Martin Gilbert was a big, big Zionist who also wrote histories of Israel. He was a big, Jewish radical, right? And he wrote a book, again, in fact, that's one thing I love about these Jewish extremists and communists and the rest of these Marxists and socialists and Zionists. Because
and Leninists and Stalinists and, it just goes on and on.
One thing I love about them, and I really like about them, maybe I shouldn't use the word love, but one thing I really like about them is they just can't help but boast of their evil. And there's a book by Martin Gilbert called Churchill and the Jews. And in this book, he basically gives the story how Churchill was totally a servant, a collaborator with the Jews. And in fact, the story of Churchill is so fascinating. I hope your listeners find it interesting. But this is historical stuff. It might be dry, but sometimes I think truth's stranger than fiction.
You bet it is.
Baron von Rothschild, the Rothschilds in Great Britain. They were looking for a typical British person of good British descent and a stellar family, a family of history in the British wars and, great honor and so forth in the family, but one that was poor, one that they could influence because they had a big economic crisis. And Churchill's family was there. Churchill was pretty bright. He was a good writer. He was a good orator. And from the very early days, they saw him as the main child of this old Churchill family, this renowned family who had an automatic seat in the House of Lords. Well, Rothschild, we're talking about the Rothschild in Great Britain. He basically approached Churchill at an early age, even when he was still a teenager, and began to develop him. In fact, it's in spy networks, that's called creating assets. It's like when they're looking to get a spy in a particular country, they go and they meet somebody accidentally, and then they talk to them and blah, blah, blah. And then they start giving them money or they loan them money and they get them in their basically employ. And in this book, Martin Gilbert lays it all out. He explains how the Rothschilds took Churchill, and again, poor family, on these big holidays to these Jewish stacked villas in Switzerland and in the Alps. how the Rothschilds paid for Churchill's what's called his kit, which and what that is when the aristocrats who became officers in the British Army, they were expected to pay for their own uniforms. In fact, the British government didn't want to, they said, these people are rich, they're aristocrats, that's why they're officers, and they can pay for their own fancy uniforms. But the uniforms were such then that they would cost the salary of a typical middle-class person, a whole year's salary just to get your uniform. Well, guess what? The Rothschilds bought it for him. The Rothschilds also gave Churchill a huge gift, which is equivalent of tens of thousands of pounds in today's money when he got married. And the whole book is about a celebration of Churchill basically as an asset for the Zionists and how Churchill was instrumental in the Balfour Declaration and how Churchill was instrumental in really getting Britain and France and the world into war against Germany, this catastrophic war that cost 64 million lives. And more than half of those were, by the way, the most innocent of all. I mean, civilians, women, children, elderly from these processes of the war. And this is all outlined in his book, you know, Churchill and the Jews. He basically talks about how, in fact, he lays it out, how the Rothschilds developed Churchill into their agent. This is amazing stuff, but this is the kind of stuff that we don't learn in the fake news media that Trump's always talking about. We have a fake news media. We have a fake academia. We have an academia that lies about us. Now, one of the things, I'll give you another example of this tribal element. Again, I hope everybody reads my book, The Secret Behind Communism. And I hope they read Alexander Solzhenitsyn's 200 Years Together. And I hope they read The Gulag Archipelago. To understand where we're heading in the world, you've got to read Gulag Archipelago 1, 2, and 3. It's very deep. And there's some people that you might enjoy my book more in a sense because it kind of takes some of the most powerful parts of that.
Yes.
And sums it up. This is the Gulag Archipelago is a tough intellectual.
Frankly, it's an ordeal to get through. But what a
it's amazing changer. Though the
yeah.
fact it's all
oh, yeah.
laid out. It's an unbelievable work of scholarship. Solzhenitsyn was not only a brave man, but he was also just such a
yeah.
brilliant man.
Your book, My Awakening, is really, I think, one of the must read books of our time on this planet. You have succinctly put together such enormous concepts and made them accessible to people. We talked about Orwell. Let me play a little clip. Have you seen this before? It's just a minute and 10.
Sure.
It's from a docudrama, but this is Orwell talking, and it's called The Final Warning, and it is
Please.
Really delivered beautifully.
In our world, there will be no emotions except fear, rage, triumph and self-abasement. The sex instinct will be eradicated. We shall abolish the orgasm. There will be no loyalty except loyalty to the party. But always there will be the intoxication of power. Always, at every moment, there will be the thrill of victory, the sensation of trampling on an enemy who is helpless. If you want a picture of the future, imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever. The moral to be drawn from this dangerous nightmare situation is a simple one. Don't let it happen. It depends on you.
Powerful and wonderful words that unless we understand, Jeff, that this is exactly, we're seeing the beginnings of this right now, the Antifa attacks upon the people who came to Charlottesville. And by the way, they weren't a group of Nazis. They weren't Klansmen. They weren't supremacists. They were Americans who understand that we are losing our country. And these Antifa are open communists. But the media never identify them as communists. And of course, Trump was eviscerated simply for pointing out that the Antifa was the one that did the attacking, which they did. It wasn't the European Americans trying to defend the great statues of Robert E. Lee. And by the way, Robert E. Lee was not just a Southern hero. He was also, believe it or not, in the early part of the 20th century, an American hero. In fact, the American United States Congress, the Congress and the Senate, decided to put a statue of Robert E. Lee, of the Confederate leader of the Confederate Army, and Jefferson Davis in the Hall of Heroes of America, because they knew that they were honorable men who were fighting for their freedom. In fact, they fought for the same principles that Thomas Jefferson fought for and George Washington fought for. Many of their ancestors, in fact, fought in the American Revolution. And they understood that these were honorable men and great men. And but we have today a takeover. And what people have to understand is the takeover is not a takeover of some ideology. Yes, the Marxist ideology is one of the driving things, and the Zionist ideology is one of the driving things, and neoconservatism, which is nothing more than a corruption of conservatism and a destruction of all the basic ideas of conservatism, because it's internationalism, it's globalism, it's endless war, it's loyalty to foreign countries and foreign entities. This is really what's going on. I wanted to mention the Frankfurt School. For instance, you've had a lot of people on your show over the years who've talked about the Frankfurt School. And Kevin McDonald has written about that. I hope you have him on at some point soon and talk about this again. The Frankfurt School was actually a school of Marxist intellectuals, right, who developed what they worked on was the practical problems of implementing socialism. In other words, getting the creations, what Orwell talked about, the Big Brother and the takeover of our society.
The party. Right.
So let's talk about the Frankfurt School a minute. Now, they worked for the destruction of the family. They worked for the destruction of the European people, the race. They worked for the destruction of Christianity and all the values of Western Christian life. They worked for pornography. They worked for every sort of destructive view in the world. So let me just run down the names for you. You can find these names, by the way, in Wikipedia. You can document this from any source, right? So here's a few of the leaders. And here's the main leaders of the so-called Frankfurt School. Friedrich Pollock, Jewish. Max Horkheimer, Jewish. Carl August Wittfogel, Jewish. Richard Sorge, Jewish. And we can just keep going on. William Reich, he was the guy that pushed the doctrine of sexual liberalism as an antidote to political conformism. In other words, the conformism or the values of Western Christian civilization. We had Adorno was involved, Lynn Lowenthal, and Adorno gave us the rules of revolution. We had Theodore Adorno again. We had Walter Benjamin. We had Eugen Habermas. We had Honneth. Now, these were all of them were Jews. Every one of them. So the Frankfurt School, which most intellectuals in terms of our movement who are conservatives and who want to preserve Western civilization understand the threat of Marxism. There's more too. There's Eric Fromm, another Jewish guy. We have Raymond Aron.
David, all of these main figures in the school, their prime directive was to learn and synthesize the works of such other Jews as Hegel, Marx, Freud, Weber, Simmel, and others. If you read about this, you'll understand right away. This was the germ that has grown into the worldwide plague that we now face. It came out of the school.
Well, it has been, and there's no doubt this became the tactic of the takeover of the West, to infect us with these weakening ideologies, ideas, and basically destroy the vitality and the self-reliance and the values, really, of our Western civilization. But the interesting thing is, and this is what's really amazing, I've heard a lot of people in the so-called conspiracy movement and people throughout the years, I've heard dozens and dozens of people talk about the Frankfurter School or the Frankfurt School. And they all talked about how evil this was and about how they were the source of about every evil principle and evil ideology imaginable. But I'd say 19 out of 20 of the people I've heard over the years in so-called conservative circles, they've talked about the Frankfurt School. They've talked about people like Reich. They've talked about people, you know, like Adorno. They've talked about these people, but they've never even identified and pointed out that every one of these were Jews, just like all the major leaders of the Bolshevik movement, including Lenin, and that's also pointed out, by the way, in Martin Gilbert's book, were Jewish. This is not an accident. Bolshevism was a way for the Jewish people to destroy the Christian Tsar and Christian Russia and take over Russia, which they considered to be, and the Russian people, which they hated. In fact, Lenin himself said how much he hated the Russians and how stupid they were and all that stuff. And by the way, in the archives of
oh, they looked the down Russian on archives, them. Oh, absolutely. You got
and
that.
The Russian archives yeah. myself, I've actually seen with, in fact, I even talked about this with Alexander Solzhenitsyn. The after the death of Lenin, they did extensive interviews with all of Lenin's family for the historical record and everything. And the members of his family, all of his immediate family, the wife, the children, and by the way, he spoke Yiddish at home. It's the paper right there, the family members say that Lenin always identified himself as a Jew and as of and their family as a Jewish family. He self-identified himself as a Jew. He also condemned the Russian people and belittled and attacked the Russian people all the time. Now, this is a guy who's head of Russia, right? This is the Russian Revolution. Here's a man who hates Russia, right? I mean, you got to read this thing and you read this stuff and you see the evidence and you got to shake your head and say, my God, how do they get away with this? And the only way, of course, they can get away with this is the control of the media the way they do. But the interesting thing is, and what you talked about in the beginning of the show, how they're trying to shut down our freedom and our understanding about all these things. All right, they control the New York Times. They control the Washington Post. They control CNN. They control the Fox, all the major commentators even on Fox. Even the guy that's supposed to interpret everything for us is Krauthammer, you know, big Jewish Zionist neocon. And Chris Wallace, who is the son of the other Wallace, the leftist commie
Mike,
from 60
Mike
Minutes.
Wallace, he was so red it was ridiculous.
Yeah, and that's his son, but he's there just like the neoconservatives, right? We're all communists, and they decided, well, communism was passe, and they didn't like the way that the fact the Russians were getting back control of the government in 1950. So they decided that communism wasn't really going to do it for taking over the country. They were going to get Marxism by calling themselves Republicans, by calling themselves neoconservatives. Leo Strauss was the founder, and all the major leaders of so-called neoconservatism, like, for instance, the fellow that runs the Weekly Standard, the Crystal family, another Jewish family, they were all communists. And you can even read articles sometimes in the New York Times that says, and I quote, they said that, well, the fact is they still admire Trotsky. Trotsky is still their hero today. Uh-huh. Now, these are supposedly conservatives, and their hero is the first head of the Red Army. And that's where we're heading. Antifa has assembled. The people out there, and in fact, even some of the media, because they're going so crazy and they're killing people and attacking people with baseball bats and so forth. Antifa, again, Forward Magazine talks about Antifa as a Jewish-founded organization of Jews and Jewish, you know,
they always have to boast about things.
Well, even the Antifa symbol is a symbol of a red flag, you know, for communism and a black flag for anarchy. And the symbol is called Antifa, Anti-Fascist Action. And the symbol they use is an exact duplicate, with a tiny change, an exact duplicate of the Communist Party symbol.
I've run
and
it.
And you can even Antifascista Action.
Mirror image. Absolutely
it's
the same. Yeah.
Same image, exactly. They even took their image from the Communist Party in 1932 in Germany. So this is what's going on. But you see, the internet has really been a problem for them for a while, and it took them a while to do it. But now that they've got total control of it, because it was a wild and woolly Wild West thing for a while, but now that they've got Facebook and social media controlled, which is Zuckerberg, now that they've got, you know, Google, which is like the
Google,
monster of
Facebook,
the internet.
Right? All, yeah, YouTube, all under the same,
Jews.
All under the same aegis,
so now they've consolidated the internet and they've got everything. They got ABC, they got CBS, they got NBC, they got, you know, Fox News. They have critical people in charge of NPR. They got people in charge of the BBC in Great Britain. I mean, we can just go on and on and on, right? So they have this massive media. They have Hollywood, which is the most powerful propaganda mechanism in the entire world.
Ever. Yeah.
That's not enough for them. They want to make sure there's not a single voice, even people like us, don't have much money. But have a great message, a very powerful message that's reaching people. I've got videos like the CNN, Goldman Sachs, and the Zion Matrix of Power. that's in about 40, 50 copies across YouTube across the world. It's in about 15, 20 languages now and translated and dubbed. Mm-hmm. And but this video has been so successful, even Lancet magazine doctors supported this. Politicians left and right have supported my video. And my video has a 96.7% positive rating, right? But now they're labeling it hate speech. So 97% of the people who watch this video, this is Google Analytics. This is now that what they've done is they've taken off the ratings of these videos, which people, thousands, tens of thousands of people have rated the video all over the world. Millions of people have seen it because they don't want people to know that everybody out there who watches the video says this is not hatred. This is reason. This is power. This is truth. Goldman Sachs. The reason why Goldman Sachs gets away with being the biggest predator criminal bank on the planet is because they're part of the tribe and they're protected by the Jewish powers like at Time Warner, like CNN and the Jewish media. They are protected by their brethren, their tribal members, such as Lanny Brower, who is going to be the prosecutor of Goldman Sachs in the Justice Department, and Ms. Shapiro, who is head of the Security Exchange Commission, and the judge in the case for Goldman Sachs. After they stole $500 billion, they ruined millions of lives in this country all over the world. They defrauded them while they were dumping these derivatives, which they created and they made trillions of dollars on, by the way, trillions of dollars over the years on. When they were dumping them, realizing the gig was up and these derivatives were going to go down, they sold these derivatives, right, for $500 billion. Much of the derivatives they sold were to the people that brought their money to Goldman Sachs, a banking and investment firm, to invest it for them. I mean, we're talking about pensions, teachers' pensions, pensions at major companies, and people who had their whole life savings, their whole life's work in these stocks, and basically Goldman Sachs defrauded them and destroyed their lives. There were many suicides after the 2008 process. And this whole process was started by Greenspan in the Federal Reserve. And he got to before the public and he said, this is really going to be great because we're going to allow people who are poor, you know, to buy houses. Now, these are people who could never make a payment, who were half the time in jail. They had all sorts of medical issues and issues with alcoholism and all sorts of other and criminality. And the purpose that Greenspan offered this was so his buddies, you know, in Goldman Sachs and other firms like that, mm-hmm. could make a fortune by creating these derivatives based on these mortgages, which were basically worthless and which they could get for a song. So they lessened all the requirements, which they knew these people could never pay back. They knew they couldn't keep a job long enough to pay it back. But this was done so these firms in turn could make trillions of dollars on these derivatives. And then they could turn around and dump them when they knew that they were valueless. And then everybody suffers except for them. And that's exactly what happened. And it happened again because of the tribalism that exists. This is the real conspiracy, Jeff. The conspiracy, just on a basis of ideas of people getting rich, wouldn't work, except for the fact that the common denominator in it
is more than that.
It's tribal.
They do. They'll stick together under any circumstance. When the bell rings, they'll answer it. Doesn't matter who they are.
And if it weren't tribal, why would this establishment, which says they're against racism and they're against ethnostates and they're for gay marriage and transvestites, why would they support the state of Israel, which is a state which becomes more Jewish every census, a state which is totally based on race and genetics? Why would they do this in a state that has outlawed intermarriage for Jews and non-Jews, in a state where the same Jewish establishment, like that runs Hollywood, runs the New York Times, and runs our establishment, they promote LGBT garbage, right? And they promote gay marriage for America. But guess what? Israel doesn't allow it. Does Israel get any grief for that? No. You know, does, you know, any European that simply loves his own people, like I'm supposed to be the great, horrible, most evil people of America. I mean, I'm not even real. I mean, when they say the name David Duke, it's like I say, it's an avatar. it's like a meme. It's not the real me, because that's not the way, you know, but they create this meme.
Yeah.
And This is the way they operate. But if I'm supposed to be the great evil, why am I the great evil? Because I actually defend the founding people of this country and want to defend our heritage and I want to defend our freedom. And we're losing our freedom, of course, every day in this country.
Every
we are
day.
Headed toward the gulag.
Every day. We are headed toward the gulag. You're looking at artificial intelligence, AI, coming in now. You're looking at 103 million Americans out of the job market. They have no work, no prospect for it. Robots are coming in. Many of them will never work. Their jobs are going to be gone. And you talk about a gulag, a mental, intellectual, social, sexual gulag. That's what we've been... Go ahead.
And the physical one will be right back. Boy, this show has really flown. I hope it was as interesting to the audience and to you as it was to me. But this is amazing material. I hope people go to davidduke.com. And by the way, we have a way now that you can contribute. And if you go to davidduke.com, you can do that. We really need your help right now. If you found some truth in this show, if you found this show as powerful, copy the program, share it on the internet. I mean, I know Jeff is fine with that. Jeff will probably also put it up.
You bet.
And get the truth out. I mean, this is the core of why we're facing what we're not facing all this stuff because of some conspiracy of Gentiles and Jews. We're talking about Jewish elite, right? And Jewish ultra-racists who are trying to create a Jewish control and domination of the planet. That's what Zionism is. It's globalist Zionism. Their Jewish nationalism is Jewish globalist power over the world.
And
Big Gurion of Israel said that.
There's never enough. Never enough. Don't forget that.
Yeah, and that's what people have to understand. So when I learned early on as a very young man about the conspiracy, I started running into all these Jews behind the communists and Jews behind the media controllers and Jews behind all these things. And then I started reading their own writing, their own Talmud. I started reading their own work. I started looking into the Frankfurt School, and I began to realize that communism and also what you call capitalism are just two sides of the same coin of Jewish globalism and Jewish control over the planet, as they talk about in the Talmud, that their divine right to rule us. Now, that may sound strange, and I don't believe every Jew understands that fact, but there's no question that Ben Gurion himself wrote in his own, in Look magazine. In fact, they asked leaders, what's your vision for the world? And he said, I believe that eventually, there'll be a new, true United Nations, right? And all armies will be abolished, and there'll be a Supreme Court of mankind, and this Supreme Court will serve in Israel. And in Israel, they'll build a shrine to the prophets, which, of course, are Jewish prophets, right? I mean, this is what Ben Gurion wrote, who was the first head of the Israeli state. He didn't see Israel as simply a place for Jews to go and whatever. He saw Israel as the place from which they would rule the world.
Oh, the top of the pyramid.
The world
that was the top of the pyramid, David. That was it.
That's right. And if you want to talk about conspiracies, anybody out there listening, if you avoid the Jewish question, you're not really fighting the conspiracy because without understanding the Jewish question, most of it just doesn't make sense to anybody. You know, when you understand the Jewish question, you understand their role in communism, you understand their role in these wars, you understand their role in the stock market, the international banks. You understand that they are the progenitors of this destruction. There are Gentiles involved, of course. There's only a small number of Jews in the world compared to other populations. Every occupying army of another country has to have collaborators in those nations, and that's where the Gentiles. It's not the people say that run Microsoft, or even now Microsoft's taken over by Jews too, that are Apple, that run the world. They basically take their orders because they will be destroyed in a heartbeat if they dare. If tomorrow Microsoft or Apple or any of these other corporations, if they tomorrow came out against Israel or came out against these Jewish Bolsheviks or for freedom of speech in this country or on the immigration, they would have antitrust legislation passed in a minute in the United States Congress.
You got it.
And they would destroy these companies, even major companies.
Very
That's
good.
Why they're trying to destroy us, because we're telling the truth, Jeff. You and I and so many others are telling the truth. And this is where we've got to go now. We've got to expose this. We have got to have freedom for our people. We've got to survive. We've got to make sure our children have a decent life. We have an obligation, every one of us, to stand up right now and support generously and to work hard and get some kahunas, get some, you know, grab
first,
some testicles.
First Amendment, if we lose
up,
our Constitution, if we lose our Constitution, it's over. The First Amendment is everything. And if the people we were talking about tonight were Samoans, or Buddhists or Hindus, we'd be talking about them the same way. It's an issue of 0.37% of the world population controlling virtually the planet already.
Yeah, but 0.37. The thing is, they're not Samoans, and they're not Himalayans, and they're not, you know,
it is what it is, and that's all we can do.
They're Jews, and they have a Jewish supremacist ideology, and that's the problem. And if we don't stand up and fight that, if we don't overthrow that tyranny, and the only way you can do that is by telling the truth about it, if we don't overthrow that tyranny, we have no future for ourselves and the children we love. Again,
right.
I look forward to hearing from people. Send me a note. You can go to davidduke.com, and please support this work, and also support this network, because Jeff, you've done such a great job, and you're so honorable, and we appreciate your total dedication to the American way and freedom of speech.
Thank you, sir. You take care, and we'll talk soon, David.
Enjoyed it. Thank you.
David Duke, the real David Duke, and the real truth of the world in which we live in. Be right back.